D1, number 18B.
So, you can see from this point of view how the question of evil is solved step by step in the understanding, so that on the highest level we gain the spiritual evidence of everything. The development in consciousness is to get the clearer and clearer view on all the problems, on all the questions, the queries and enigmas of being, until we see all in the one light, its spiritual evidence. But then, only as we let that spiritual evidence demonstrate itself, operate by itself, and don't put anything into its way, then we have to descend. And in the descending way, this spiritual evidence is going to prove itself in spite of the material evidence. Then we have the proof in the material, as we say. Then we have the proof on every level of thought. So can you see that the ascent is only a clarification of consciousness to the point where it begins to see the oneness of being, wherein there is no more any doubt, any question, any query, any enigma, any negative problem, and so on. But it's only understanding, spiritual evidence. But that has in itself the translating power of the descent of the Holy Ghost, which proves that spiritual evidence in the material in spite of the physical. So the ascending and descending consciousness together make up practical, operative Christianity. Why this is so important to realize, I will explain very, very soon. But before that, let's see what we were discussing when we considered the sixth chapter in the textbook last year. In that sixth chapter, she showed the power of revelation. That revelation comes from God, that it is a gift from above, and that we have seen that everything must be revelation. But how do we get revelation? God reveals himself constantly to himself. But how does God constantly reveal himself to us? That's another question. He can only reveal itself to us if through the metaphysical ascent, everything within us has been cleared and brought into light and made transparent for the light to shine in. So, though we begin to realize not only in spiritual things, but also in all other sciences, that the greatest discoveries were made by revelation, by intuition, by illumination or enlightenment, by sudden vision, by sudden combination of thought, that doesn't happen to any consciousness, that it only happens to those consciousnesses. Can you say consciousnesses?
Yes.
Yeah? I didn't know that there is a plural of sudden. So it can only happen to that consciousness which is ready for it, which through the drilling, the culturing of the ascending way is so clear that the light can shine through. So let's not fall now into that dangerous attitude which says, All right, we have seen that Mrs. Eddy got her whole revelation through revelation, or her whole discovery through revelation, and it's only revelation that matters. Yes, it matters. But it only comes when, through the first four chapters of the textbook, through the ascending way, consciousness is ready and receptive for the breaking in of that revelation, which means that only through sitting down and only through listening to God, through what is called meditation and so on, no true, real scientific revelation can break in. It's only when through the ascending consciousness of understanding, culturing that understanding, culturing that fundamental understanding, the fundamentals of being, only into that consciousness a new revelation can break in. Only to an ascending thought, a descending revelation can come. I come back to that. But let's see in the meantime that, therefore, that part which we play in the whole of science is really the ascending of consciousness. And that in that ascending way, we should see that each level asks really for the next one. That we can't stay always on the level of Christian Science. Perhaps many of us have mostly or foremostly been culturing our thought on the level of Christian Science, namely in the Word Order, the Christ Order, Christianity Order, Science Order. We were doing our exercises and our studies on that level of the four orders. And unless we are willing to let us push further to the level of absolute Christian Science, the lower level of Christian Science will grow stale on us, sooner or later. Because it is in the nature of being that consciousness rises, 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 rises. So let's be receptive for always seeing that even if we are happy within one structure of consciousness, that we feel, isn't there something higher than that? Let's be used by the impulsion of life, truth and love really to go higher and higher. On the descending way, we also must see that even if we have a touch of a highest level, like divine science, that this highest level must include the level of absolute Christian Science and of Christian Science. The level, one level alone, is never anything by itself. It is always an aspect of the whole chart. It can never be taken out of the whole chart and say, oh, from now on, I don't want to think in any other level but in divine science. So many people do that. They only want to think in the oneness, in the allness. Meaning and showing that they refuse the descending way of the chart. The descending which says, but this oneness includes the demonstrations of ideas on the level of absolute Christian Science, and it includes the demonstration on the level of Christian Science, namely the demonstration of disproving evil, error, sin, disease, death, lack, disharmony, and so on. So let's see that no one of these levels exists by themselves. That if we start the ascending way, that somehow our consciousness must be open to go further and further, higher and higher. And if consciousness touches something high, which from time to time it always does, then let's have it descending on every other level of consciousness. Then only the whole thing is a whole. Then science is an integrated science. Then all the levels are integrated into one science. And then alone really is it science. Until then, it is a belief in science. Just the belief in science. Now, why is this point so necessary to see? You see, we were discussing that we want to see where we stand at the present moment in the whole development of human consciousness. And in that development of human consciousness, we can see today that there are two great categories of consciousness on this earth, the East and the West, the Eastern religion and philosophy, and the Western culture of Christianity, more or less born at the same time, around about 500 BC. What is the classic Western sense of Christianity? It's the practicability of religion. It's a pragmatic sense of spiritual things. Christianity is a practical religion. It's a religion which has somehow infiltrated everything in our life. The Western, the Christian culture is impregnated with Christian ideas through and through, in law, in business, in morals, in every way. It's a pragmatic religion. It is a religion of demonstration, using. It's the religion that has its accent on the descent, on demonstration. The classic Eastern religion, the classic Hinduism, is just the very opposite. It is a religion that puts the accent on the ascending, namely, how can we come to that transcendental stage where everything is clear and transparent and called nirvana? Where through some technique, whatever the technique is, meditation or asceticism or yogi exercises or what it is, that through some way or technique, we can ascend and ascend to that point of complete enlightenment, the state of what the Hindus call Samadhi and what the Zen Buddhists call Satori. It's that great experience of complete enlightenment. That's the end. And the classic Hinduism isn't interested in the descent to make it practical. That's why the Western civilization based on Christendom has been that civilization which has brought forth science, which has brought forth the technical age, the practicability, industrialization, and so on and so on and so on. The Eastern is that which likes to go away from the world and not into the world. So each one had its accent on one, and not one of them combined both. The development was, in big lines, really this, that when, I think, 1857, the East Indian Company, historically, fought the battle against India and won it, that India could see that their philosophy was inferior to the West. And for the first time after so many hundreds and hundreds of years, or practically 2,500 years, they began to question their scriptures, their holy scriptures, the Vedas, began to question the divine inspiration of the Vedas, because they began to see that they were inferior to the Western. Just the same as you read in the Bible, every time the Israelites couldn't win against the Babylonians or the Assyrians or so on, they began to question, haven't they the better gods than we have? And so they began to question that, and for the first time some reform set in India, in the Hinduism, to feel that something should be taken over from the Christian religion. Another change came in 1893, when in Chicago was that World Parliament of Religion, the first time where the East and the West met for discussion and interchange of idea. And there the Hindus had a very good representative, the Swami Vivekananda, and he presented to the materialistic Western world the transcendental religion of the Hindus. It was already at the point where the materialism, the technical age, began to show its deficient elements. And so at that point, apparently, this presentation of Hinduism made quite an enormous impression on the Western thought, that there is a way out of materialism into spirituality, or the divine, or the transcendental, or whatever you can call. And from that moment on, the West was becoming more and more interested into Hinduism, which you witness today very, very much. More than ever before, the Westerners are very much impressed by Eastern philosophy. Because, you see, first, Hinduism, who had the ascending way, was impressed by the descending way of the Western world and Christendom. Then, in Chicago, was perhaps a turning point where the Western world with the descending way was impressed by the ascending way. And it is in that period, really, into which falls Mrs. Eddy's discovery of the ascending way. Namely, to show there is a way of ascending, but through science, and not through meditation, or through mysticism, or yogi exercises, or anything like that. So that in that time, those two came together. The ascending, pure ascending way of the West, on the basis of understanding, and the greater import of the necessity of a descending way for the East. A new turn came round about Mrs. Eddy's time of when she passed on, when a completely new reformation in Hinduism took place. Its exponent is Sri Aurobindo. I don't know if you should know him. He was quite a well-known student in Cambridge at that time, afterwards a revolutionist in India, and then when imprisoned, he got that insight of reforming Hinduism. And what was his reforming? Nothing else than that these two strains of ascending and descending became closer and closer in his writings. When you read his writings, you can see that his ascending way is very, very near to what we feel is the ascending way through prayer, through mind, spirit, soul, to reach principle. And when one reads his writings on the necessity of the descent, one just sees the translation of the scientific translation of divine mind and the retranslation through 3 degrees of the translation of mortal mind. It isn't yet impregnated or, with understanding, but more and more one can see that the world becomes one, that once an idea is born to earth, it begins to leaven thought over the whole earth. Once an idea is born to Christianity, it's going to leaven Hinduism. Once an idea is born in any other place, it's going to leaven every place and every consciousness, because it's one world, one consciousness. So, little by little, really, we begin to see that there is that possibility of the converging of the ascending and descending into one science. And that's what the chart really wants to show, that there is this way. Or if you look at the Old Testament, in the Old Testament, Jacob had that dream of the angel ascending and descending. See, that's the Old Testament. The approach to God and the return from God. By the way, this, I forgot that. While I was speaking, I knew I had forgotten something, but I didn't know what. In this new reformation of Hinduism, it's quite explicit how they say that the ascending way to the nirvana is only the right starting point for the descent from the nirvana into the world. See, that's a tremendous reformation. I would say much bigger than the Christian reformation through Luther and Zwingli and so on, and what's going on there. That they don't see any more the nirvana as the accomplishment of their religion and of endeavor, but only to win the right starting point. Well, what have we been doing last time, you see? We jumped off from the right starting point, from the top, from the oneness, and said, now, how does that translate itself right down on every plane of thought? So, now I come back. Sorry, I missed that at the right place. In the Old Testament, Jacob saw the ascending and the descending. But when we come to the New Testament, Jesus said, no man has ascended up to heaven, but he that hath come down from heaven. The New Testament shows the descending and ascending way. Even the Son of Man who is in heaven. The man who is in heaven. Then he doesn't need to ascend nor descend. Then we come to the highest climax, where we just see, well, ascending and descending are only human working tools for consciousness in order to grasp the fact that principle and idea is one.